or a total of 2 to 3 hours a week. Choose the option that works for you and make it an integral part of your lifestyle. More specific recommendations await you in the next chapters. Keep that brain of yours busy. It is also useful to exercise your brain in simple ways that strengthen the connection between brain cells and counteract the brain shrinkage that would otherwise occur naturally as we age. There are plenty of options, from reading this book to going to the theater. My personal suggestion is to try board games. As we discussed in Chapter 10, playing board games is an excellent way to spend time with your family and friends while engaging intellectually at the same time. In Italy, I grew up playing tombola, or as you probably call it, bingo, with my grandparents and friends alike, which always made for a fun, cozy Sunday afternoon or a memorable Christmas Eve. Now that I'm older, I play tombola with my nieces and their grandparents and can't wait for my daughter to be old enough to join in. Whichever form of entertainment you choose, play hard. Also remember to make time to see your friends and family. Looking for inspiration? Go to the movies or to a play. Go for a walk if the weather is nice. Check out a new vegetarian restaurant. Cuddle on the couch and peruse old family pictures. Or just talk about your day. Call your family and friends if you can't get together in person. Anybody you haven't seen in a while? This is a great time to say hello and catch up. Having your support team around you on a regular basis is essential for making lifelong memories and making you and your brain feel that all is well. Sleep tight. Don't be afraid to take a nap. Make sure you sleep well, especially during the first part of the night, relative to how long you can sleep, when your deep sleep stage occurs. This is essential for the brain to cleanse itself from harmful toxins, including those amyloid plaques characteristic of Alzheimer's. If you aren't getting enough sleep, consider taking naps during the day to get some rest. For years, napping has been derided as a sign of laziness. In America, people are caught napping or found asleep at the switch. In many cultures, particularly those that hail from Mediterranean and tropical regions, afternoon napping is commonplace and is actually built into the daily routine. When I was little, my nonno, grandfather, would always excuse himself to take a cat nap right after lunch. Siesta is a big deal in many other countries the world over. Although nap time is not officially scheduled in these countries, it is not uncommon for stores and government offices to close an hour or two every afternoon so that people can take a break and relax, especially during the hot summer months. While this might or might not negatively impact productivity, napping has recently garnered a new respect in the United States thanks to scientific evidence that dozing off benefits both mental acuity and overall health. Give it a try and see if it works for you. Stop and smell the roses. Finally, if you are not feeling happy or satisfied with the way your life is going, you can eat all the broccoli you want, and your health might suffer anyway. It is very important that you take whatever steps necessary to reduce stress and enjoy your journey on the planet as best you can. Take a breather. Enjoy time with your family and loved ones, and make a point of being social in those ways that feel best to you. Seek out those communities that make you feel needed, appreciated, and productive. Finding your happy place is a must when it comes to your overall health and the well-being of your brain. Step 3. Toward the optimal brain diet. 14. How brain nutritious is your diet, really? The three levels of neuronutrition care. Each brain is unique and requires different degrees of care. The best way to determine what your brain needs for optimal nutrition and health would be to conduct several thorough exams, not the least of which would be a brain scan. However, not many people have access to a brain scan to take a peek at what's actually going on inside their heads. This prompted me to develop a test to help predict what your brain might look like if you had that personalized scan before you. The test is based on my experience inspecting hundreds of brain scans over many years of research. This familiarity has allowed me to observe several correlations between what shows up in the scan and a variety of clinical and lifestyle measures, especially diet and nutritional quality. While the test won't illustrate what your brain actually looks like, it will help pinpoint how this most precious organ is feeling on the inside. For example, some brains have been fed pro-inflammatory foods for so long that they are now in dire need of soothing that inflammation. Other brains receive so few omega-3s that their neurons can no longer function properly. Others still grow desperate for oxygen because of a sedentary lifestyle, having deprived them too long of what they need to comfortably survive. If you think back on Chapter 1, you might remember the difference between the brain scans of one person who had followed a brain-healthy diet and another person who did not eat well at all. You probably recall that the brain of the first one looked great, while the other brain showed signs of aging and deterioration. The simple truth is that if you feed yourself high-quality nutrients, your brain, in turn, will be made of high-quality tissue. This is what helps you stay cognitively fit and provides you with resilience against aging and disease. The test will prompt you to take a careful look into various choices you make on a daily basis to get a clearer picture as to which ways you support your brain health and which ways you might inadvertently sabotage it instead. As I've made clear throughout the book, eating well for our brains is difficult because the clues don't arrive in the form of genes that fit or firmer abs. So, taking the test is a convenient way to learn how close or how far away your daily diet is from one that's optimal for long-term cognitive fitness. As a result, the test will classify you at one of three main levels: beginner, intermediate, or advanced. Your current level is a reflection of all the choices you've made and continue to make on a daily basis with respect to your diet, nutrition, and overall health. This information will in turn help you zone in on which aspects of taking care of your brain health need work and which ones are already pointed in the right direction, allowing you access to a health plan that is specific and detailed to your individual needs. When it comes to getting healthy, one size does not fit all. Having as much information as possible with regard to your own brain's health status can be extremely helpful in guiding you to take powerful steps toward gaining balance and achieving your goals. So along with the general recommendations described in Step 2, eating for cognitive power, once you discover which level you're at, the next chapter will provide you with targeted recommendations that are customized to your level in particular. These recommendations are aimed at providing natural lifestyle guidelines that can be followed at home and on a day-to-day basis. In addition, there are brain-healthy recipes and sample menu plans that will further help you take control of your own customized brain health. This final step of discovering and embracing your personal care will give you all the necessary information to achieve and maximize optimal brain power. Test instructions. The test is focused on your diet, although it also gathers some information about your behavior, beginning with those habits you had as a child and continuing to the basic patterns you've established since. Base your answers on what you've observed to be the most consistent indicators of your behavior over a long period of time, rather than what might be new or recent to your present state. If you developed an illness in childhood or as an adult, think of how things were for you before or after that illness. Focusing on what is more reflective of what your habits are overall. For fairly objective physical traits, answering clearly will be less of an issue. Since behaviors tend to be more subjective, answer according to how you have acted most of your life, or predominantly during the past few years. For each question, jot down one response, A, B, C, or D, that best applies to you. I will read each question and option. In some cases, you might find that none of the responses offered describe you exactly. In those instances, don't worry, just choose the answer that comes closest to describing your general tendencies. Remember, we're looking for common patterns and habits, so there's no need to get hung up on the exact details or specific wording of each question or response. If for any given question you feel that more than one of the responses applies to you, circle the one that applies the best. All the words in that column need not apply for you to make the selection. For example, in response to the question, "What are you most likely to have for breakfast, if time is no object?" one of the answers is something along these lines: eggs, bacon, or sausage, pancakes, buttered toast, hash browns. As long as one or more of the foods listed applies, select that response. There might be questions that are difficult for you to answer. For example, if you have a peanut allergy, you won't be able to pick your favorite peanut butter type. In this case, just try to imagine what you probably would have picked if you weren't allergic. Would you buy one of the leading commercial brands or a certified organic brand? Would you eat a spoonful as a quick snack or happily work on the entire jar? Similarly, vegan, vegetarians might be hard-pressed to answer some questions about meat consumption. In this case, just try to imagine what you would do if you were to eat meat instead. For example, if you're the type who regularly eats organic produce, you might very well also be the type who would have chosen organic grass-fed beef had you been a meat eater. Also, be sure to answer all questions in terms of what you actually do, not what you would like to do or think you should do. Try to be as thoughtful as you can, and remember that this is not about being right or wrong or good or bad. These are your private answers. So the only right way to answer these questions is with honesty. You won't get grades or a lecture. We are here to define your typical lifestyle patterns and choices as they stand now, to improve whatever can be improved for you to enjoy your future good health. You might be surprised to find out that you don't know the answers to all the questions. For example, you might not know offhand how you would react to a specific type of food or combination of foods. If this is the case, what you should do is simply put the test aside for a little while until you can gauge your reaction to the food in question. Though I don't want you to struggle too much with any questions or aspects of this test, accuracy is important, so take your time and don't rush through them. Note that you can always take the test again at any point in the future. In fact, this is something you'll want to do periodically to see if your habits have changed, which can and will occur as you improve your choices to better suit your brain's needs. Take the test. I will read each numbered question, along with each answer option, A through D. Write down each letter answer as you listen to the question. 1. How often do you eat fish? A. Rarely or never, I don't like fish. B. A couple of times a month. C. At least once a week. D. I love fish. I eat it on average twice a week, if not more. 2. How often do you eat salmon, sardines, mackerel, or fresh tuna? A. Hardly ever or never. B. I'll have salmon a few times a month. C. Often, like once or twice a week. D. More than twice a week. 3. When you eat fish, how is it usually prepared? A. Canned tuna fish or a tuna salad sandwich is okay. B. Fish with some kind of sauce, like sweet and sour or teriyaki, for example. C. I'll often have sushi or something like that. D. Roasted, steamed, carpaccio, any which way. 4. How often do you eat caviar or fish roe? A. Ew. B. Once in a blue moon. C. A couple of times a month. D. About once a week or as often as I can. 5. Do you take fish oil or omega-3 supplements? A. No, I don't. B. Sometimes or as prescribed by my doctor. C. Frequently, like 2 to 3 times a week, or I take them when I don't eat fish. D. Yes, every day, or I take them when I don't eat fish. 6. What are your favorite vegetables? A. Potatoes. Tomatoes are fine too, especially in pizza or pasta sauce. B. Anything goes, as long as there's a tasty enough dressing mixed in or on top. C. Broccoli, green beans, and or Brussels sprouts. D. Fresh, vibrant summer salads with all kinds of veggies thrown in. 7. How often do you eat orange vegetables like carrots and sweet potatoes? A. Rarely. I'll sometimes order sweet potato fries instead of regular fries. B. Sometimes, mostly in soups. C. About once a week in my salads or as a side dish. D. A couple of times a week, roasted, mashed, or steamed, they make a great side dish. 8. How often do you eat leafy green, broccoli, kale, spinach, etc., and or cruciferous vegetables, broccoli, cauliflower, or cabbage? A. Rarely. I don't eat a ton of greens, but I eat the classic iceberg lettuce salad sometimes. B. I enjoy them once in a while, but I like other veggies better. C. Frequently, like 2 to 3 times a week. D. Every day or almost every day. 9. How often do you eat low GI fruit like berries, blueberries, raspberries, and or citrus, orange, grapefruit? A. Rarely or never. B. Once in a while, not regularly. C. Once or twice a week. D. Twice a week or more. 10. What kinds of fruit do you prefer? A. Bananas, figs, raisins, and or dried cranberries. B. Tropical fruits like mango and pineapple. C. Apples, pears, nectarines, cantaloupe, and or watermelon. D. Berries and or citrus fruits like oranges. 11. When you go shopping for produce, what are you most likely to buy? A. I usually buy frozen fruits and vegetables. B. I typically buy lettuce and tomatoes or other salad ingredients. C. Leafy greens like kale and or cruciferous vegetables like broccoli. D. All sorts of different types of colorful veggies, a rainbow on a plate. 12. How often do you eat frozen fruits or vegetables? A. Often, like 3 to 4 times a week or more. B. Frequently, like once a week. C. Occasionally, like once or twice a month. D. Rarely or never. 13. Do you make an effort to eat fresh, organic produce every day? A. Not really. B. I'm not overly concerned with organic foods, but I'll eat them when available. C. Yes, as much as I can afford. D. Definitely. 14. How often do you eat fatty fruits like avocados and or olives? A. Rarely or never. B. Sometimes, like a few times a month. C. Frequently, like once a week or so. D. Once a week or more. 15. How often do you eat whole grains, e.g. brown rice, quinoa, bran, wheat? A. Rarely. I prefer regular white flour foods. B. Sometimes. C. Often, like 3 to 4 times a week. D. Almost every day. 16. How often do you eat white flour breads, pastas, or pizza? A. Every day or close enough. B. About 3 to 4 times a week. C. I like my pasta, but everything in moderation. D. Rarely or never. 17. How often do you eat legumes like lentils, beans, or chickpeas? A. Rarely or never. B. A couple of times a month. C. About once a week. D. Twice a week or more. 18. Are nuts, especially almonds and walnuts, a regular part of your diet? A. Not really, unless you count peanuts. In that case, yes. B. Sort of, I like to bake with them. C. I often put them in my shakes. D. I eat them all the time, as a snack, and in my soups and salads. 19. Are seeds, especially flax, chia, sesame, or hemp seeds, a regular part of your diet? A. I barely recognize what some of those are. B. I eat them occasionally. C. I often put them in my shakes and or salads. D. Yes, I love to include them in my meals. 20. How often do you eat plain, unsweetened yogurt? A. Oh dear, yuck. B. I don't love plain yogurt, but will eat it with fresh fruit or other toppings. C. Often, it's good for you. D. Several times a week. 21. How often do you eat fermented foods, e.g. yogurt, sauerkraut, kimchi? A. Rarely, except for sauerkraut on a hot dog. B. Once in a while, not regularly. C. A couple of times a week. D. Regularly, I know it helps with digestion. 22. Do you pay attention to the amount of fiber in your diet? A. No, not so much. B. I eat vegetables, though not regularly. C. Yes, I eat enough vegetables and grains. D. Yes, I eat plenty of leafy green vegetables, whole grains and or legumes. 23. How often do you eat lean protein, e.g. fish, poultry, beef, eggs, or soy products like tofu? A. I eat meat or chicken every day, and quite a few eggs, too. B. I don't eat much fish or tofu, but eat plenty of chicken, beef, and eggs. C. Most of the time. D. I don't eat much chicken or beef, but eat plenty of fish or tofu. 24. Do you tend to prefer fish and chicken over red meat and pork? A. No, if I'm honest, I like beef or pork, bacon, ribs, deli meat, better than chicken or fish. B. I eat mostly poultry, red meat or pork once in a while. C. I eat red meat and or pork much less frequently than fish and chicken. D. I prefer fish or chicken over red meat and pork. 25. How often do you eat red meat, pork, or high-fat dairy? A. I eat one or more of these foods on a daily basis. B. Several times a week. C. A couple of times a month. D. Less than once a month. 26. How often do you eat commercially raised chicken, beef, and or pork? If vegan, vegetarian, if I were to eat meat, I'd choose... A. All the time. Organic meat is too expensive, and I'm not sure it's really that different. B. Quite frequently. I'm not really picky about it. C. Occasionally, if I don't have access to organic meat. D. Rarely or never. I prefer organic, pasture-raised meat. 27. How many eggs do you eat in a typical week? Take into account eggs contained in baked goods, custards, quiche, etc. If vegan, vegetarian, if I were to eat eggs, I'd choose. A. I eat 2 or more eggs a day. B. I eat a couple of eggs 3 to 4 times a week, about 6 to 8 eggs per week. C. I eat a couple of eggs 1 to 2 times a week, about 2 to 4 eggs per week. D. I usually have 1 or 2 eggs a week, preferably cage-free. 28. What kind of cheese do you eat most often? A. Canned or sliced and chunked deli cheeses. B. Packaged cheese, especially cheddar or American. C. Fresh, creamy cheese like a brie or camembert. D. Dry, aged cheeses like Parmesan or goat cheese like feta. 29. Do you include unrefined extra virgin vegetable oils, such as olive, flaxseed, or coconut, in your diet? A. Rarely. I prefer butter or margarine. B. Olive oil for sure. The other oils, not as much. C. I use them quite often. D. I use unrefined oils all the time. 30. Are you concerned with trans fats? And do you check labels to avoid purchasing them? A. Not really. B. Not overly concerned, but I keep an eye on the labels. C. I avoid them as much as I can. D. I don't eat any foods that contain trans fats and stick to organic sources instead. 31. Do you cook with herbs, e.g. rosemary, sage, garlic, in place of salt? A. No, I use salt when cooking or baking. B. It depends on the recipe. I typically use both. C. I frequently use herbs instead of salt. D. Yes, I always cook with herbs in place of salt. 32. How often do you eat garlic and onions, either raw or cooked? A. Rarely or never. B. Sometimes, like a few times a month. C. Frequently, like once a week or so. D. Once a week or more. 33. Do you ever use the spice turmeric or curry in your meals? A. What is it? B. Sometimes, I could take it or leave it. C. I like curry. I'll have some form of curry every other week or so. D. I love turmeric and include it in many of my soups, stews, and curries. 34. Do you typically add salt to your food? A. I add salt to most everything. Food tastes bland without it. B. A little bit on a meal every day. C. I don't typically add salt after cooking. D. I use very little salt, if any, and mostly while cooking. 35. How often do you drink 8 or more glasses of plain water a day? A. I don't like water much. I'd rather have juice or soda or something more flavorful. B. Sometimes I know I should drink more water. C. Most of the time. D. All of the time. 36. What are you most likely to do when you feel thirsty? A. Chug an ice-cold soda or commercial beverage. B. An iced tea or juice would be nice. C. Drink cold water or other beverage. D. Water's my go-to, preferably at room temperature. 37. How often do you drink juice and or soda? A. Every day. I might have OJ in the morning and soda sometime during the day. B. Often, I don't like water very much. C. Sometimes, preferably Diet Coke. D. Rarely or never. 38. How likely are you to start the day with a cup of herbal tea? A. Very unlikely. B. Not my preference, but I'm fine with it once in a while. C. I drink tea quite frequently. D. Very likely. 39. How often do you drink red wine? A. Hardly ever, I prefer beer. B. Occasionally, at a restaurant. C. A couple of times a week. D. I typically drink 1 to 2 glasses of red wine a day. 40. How often do you enjoy a cocktail or a glass of hard liquor? A. Can't wait for Friday's happy hour. B. Most evenings. C. Once in a while, mostly socially. D. Only on special occasions. 41. How often do you drink milk as a beverage? A. Just about every day. B. Frequently, like 2 to 3 times a week. C. Occasionally, as a special treat. D. Rarely or never. 42. On a daily basis, how many cups of coffee or caffeinated beverages do you have? A. Several. B. 2 to 3. C. I start my day with a tall cup of coffee or other caffeinated beverage and might have another cup later in the day. D. I have 1 cup of coffee or caffeinated beverage at the most. 43. How do you take your coffee? A. Vanilla, caramel, macchiato, commercial frappe, e.g. frappuccino, lattes, any of these will do. B. With cream and sugar or sweeteners like Splenda or Sweeten Low. C. With sugar or sweeteners like Splenda or Sweeten Low. D. Black. I might add a dash of milk or alternate dairy. 44. Do you use honey, maple syrup or stevia instead of sugar or other sweeteners? A. Nope, I'd rather use white sugar. B. I use sweeteners like Splenda and Sweeten Low most of the time. C. Yes, as much as possible. D. Yes, all the time. 45. What are your favorite kinds of desserts? A. Rich desserts like cheesecake or a chocolate brownie. B. Cake or ice cream, depending on the day. C. I like variety, but everything in moderation. D. Small and intense, like a piece of dark chocolate. 46. How often do you enjoy desserts like pie, cookies, or ice cream? A. Almost every day I have a sweet tooth. B. Frequently, like 3 to 4 times a week. C. About once a week. D. Rarely, everything in moderation. 47. How often do you eat commercial pies, donuts, pancakes, pastries, and/or muffins? A. Nearly every day. B. Frequently, like 2 to 3 times a week. C. Occasionally, like once or twice a month. D. Rarely or never. When I eat dessert, it's fresh, whole food with organic ingredients. 48. Did you grow up eating commercially packaged chocolates, pastries, and candies, e.g. Hershey's, Kisses, Twizzlers, Pop-Tarts? A. Definitely, and I still eat them. B. I did. I still might have something like that once in a while. C. I might have eaten them, but never loved them. D. I didn't grow up eating candy. 49. Fresh vegetables and fruits, nuts, legumes, and whole grains with smaller amounts of fish and eggs. Does this sound like your typical diet? A. Not at all. B. I eat like this once in a while, but it isn't my typical diet. C. Not my typical diet pattern, but I often eat that way. D. Yes, this is my typical diet pattern. 50. Does your diet include mostly meat, white breads or pastas, potatoes, cheese, and/or fried foods? A. They happen to be my favorites. B. Frequently, I'm a meat and potato kind of person. C. I don't eat much bread or pasta, but I do like meat and the occasional fries. D. Those foods are not a main part of my diet. 51. What are you most likely to have for breakfast if time is no object? A. Something along these lines. Eggs, bacon or sausage, pancakes, buttered toast, hash browns. B. Fresh muffins, scones, eggs. C. I'm flexible. Scrambled eggs are good, but so is oatmeal and fruit. D. Something light, like oatmeal or whole grain toast, unless I'm having a fruit and veggie smoothie. 52. Does your typical lunch consist of a deli sandwich, e.g., a packaged ham, Swiss and mayo kind of sandwich, and maybe chips on the side? A. Yes, that's me. B. Frequently, maybe 2 to 3 times a week. C. Occasionally, if I don't have access to other foods. D. Rarely or never. I'm more of a soup and salad kind of person. 53. At a barbecue, what are you most likely to throw on the grill? A. Burgers, ribs, hot dogs, cheeseburgers. B. Mostly meat, but some corn would be nice too. C. A nice piece of chicken. D. Vegetables, like zucchini, eggplant, tomatoes, shrimp and fish too. 54. How often do you eat each day? A. 3 meals or more a day and 2 to 5 snacks. B. 3 meals a day and 2 substantial snacks. C. 3 meals a day and light snacks. D. 3 meals a day and a light snack occasionally. 55. Do you typically eat small portions of food, e.g. meat or fish, portion to the size of the palm of your hand, cheese, portion to the length of your pinky finger, fruit the size of a small apple? A. I generally eat larger portions of food. B. Sometimes, when I'm not hungry. C. Frequently, though I can eat larger portions of certain foods. D. Most of the time, if not always. 56. How often do you eat larger portions of animal foods, e.g., more than 3 ounces of meat or poultry, more than 2 ounces of dairy, and or more than 2 eggs. A. Every day or almost. I prefer larger portions. B. Quite often. C. Occasionally, mostly poultry and eggs. D. Rarely or never. 57. How often do you realize you've eaten too much after a meal? A. Quite often. Sometimes I have to take antacids. B. Often on weekends and definitely on holidays. C. I might end up eating too much over the holidays, but usually have good control over what I eat. D. Rarely or never. 58. If the doctor told you to stop eating when you're 50% full, would you be okay doing that? A. How would I know when I'm 50% full? B. It would be difficult, but I'd try. C. Yes, but probably not every meal. D. Not a problem. I never stuff myself. 59. Are there at least 12 hours without any food between the time you finish dinner and the time you begin breakfast, e.g., dinner at 8 p.m., breakfast at 8 a.m., with no snacks in between? A. Rarely. I usually have dessert or a snack later at night or before bed. B. Sometimes, but more like 6 to 8 hours instead of 12. C. Most of the time, but I'm not strict about it. D. Yes, easily. I usually have an early dinner and refrain from eating until the next morning. 60. Do you ever skip meals? A. Sometimes I don't eat from breakfast to happy hour. B. I often skip breakfast. C. Sometimes, if I'm in a rush or too busy to eat. D. Rarely or never. 61. How often do you feel like you need a pick-me-up after a meal, most likely something sugary or a cup of coffee? A. I always have a cup of coffee or a piece of candy after lunch. B. My blood sugar often drops early in the afternoon, and I need a little pick-me-up. C. Sometimes I'll have a cup of coffee or a little candy. D. Rarely or never. I usually feel energized after a meal. 62. Do you cook your own meals or eat cooked-from-scratch meals made by someone else? A. I rarely cook, or I might cook dinner if I have time. B. Occasionally, I'm happy with takeout and or prepared foods. C. I cook frequently, but I enjoy eating out, too. D. I cook or eat meals prepared from scratch the vast majority of the time. 63. How often do you eat processed foods, like canned soups, frozen or prepared meals, commercial pastries or cakes, crackers, etc.? A. Often, like 3 to 4 times a week or more. B. Frequently, like once a week. C. Occasionally, like once or twice a month. D. Rarely or never. 64. When you're tired and coming home late from work, how likely are you to just pop a prepared dinner in the microwave or eat any other form of prepared or packaged foods? A. Very likely. B. It could happen, but not all the time. C. Quite unlikely, unless they have nothing else in the house. D. Very unlikely. 65. How often do you eat fast food and fried food? A. I love French fries and fast food. I eat them more than 3 times a week. B. Fairly often, maybe 3 times a week. C. Occasionally, like once a week. D. Never or once in a blue moon. 66. How often do you eat low-fat or fat-free foods? A. Almost every day. B. Frequently, like 2 to 3 times a week. C. Occasionally, if I don't have access to other foods. D. Rarely or never. 67. How often do you eat commercial breakfast cereals, e.g., Special K, Rice Krispies, Corn Pops, Cocoa Puffs, Raisin Bran? A. That's an everyday breakfast for me. B. Frequently, like 2 to 3 times a week. C. Occasionally, like once or twice a month. D. Rarely or never. 68. How often do you find yourself reaching for a snack while you're at work or doing other activities, such as driving, reading, running errands, etc.? A. All the time. B. Quite often, I'm a nibbler. C. Once in a while, especially when doing something boring. D. Rarely or never. 69. What is your most typical snack? A. Chips, pretzels, candy, or cheese. B. Candy or something sweet. C. Nuts or nut butter. D. A piece of fruit, some almonds, and or yogurt. 70. Do you snack after dinner or during the evening or night hours? A. Yes, I enjoy eating popcorn or chips while watching TV. B. I often feel like a little dessert after meals, especially after dinner. C. Occasionally, I could take it or leave it. D. Rarely or never. 71. When you go to the movies, how likely are you to get soda and popcorn? A. That's what the movies are about. B. Popcorn, pretty likely. C. Popcorn occasionally. D. Not my thing. 72. What kind of peanut butter or other nut butters do you like best? A. One of the top commercial brands, Skippy, Jif, Peter Pan, etc. B. I usually buy flavored peanut butter, e.g. with salt, honey, chocolate. C. I buy organic peanut butter as often as I can. D. Organic and unsalted. I even make it myself sometimes. 73. How would you describe your digestion? How frequently are you constipated or have diarrhea? A. My digestion is not great. I often experience constipation or have diarrhea. B. I feel constipated or have diarrhea with some frequency. C. I'm usually regular, though once in a while I'll have a difficult day. D. I am very regular. It's very rare that I experience constipation or diarrhea. 74. After eating a meal, how often do you feel bloated, gassy, or uncomfortable? A. I have all these kinds of digestive issues most of the time. B. Often, I frequently have a sensitive stomach, sometimes queasy or acidic. C. Occasionally, mostly as a reaction to specific foods. D. Rarely or never. 75. Do you need to lose weight around your waist and hips? A. Alas, I do. B. Yes, some. I tend to put on weight around my waist and hips. C. Maybe a little bit. D. Not really. I'm pretty fit. 76. Do you gain or lose weight easily? A. I've been trying to lose weight forever. B. I can gain a few pounds easily and have difficulty losing them. C. I've been on a few yo-yo diets, but otherwise my weight is quite stable. D. I've been my current weight for most of my life, give or take a few pounds. 77. If you have a sore throat or feel like you're coming down with a cold or fever, how likely are you to drink plenty of water and get extra rest, rather than taking antibiotics? A. I'd rather get an antibiotic from my doc and get it over with. B. Quite likely, depending on how bad I feel. C. I might get a prescription anyway, in case it gets worse. D. I'm able to heal most things via good self-care. Antibiotics are a last resort. 78. How frequently have you taken antibiotics since you were a child? A. More than once a year. B. About once a year. C. Less than once a year. D. Rarely or never. 79. Is your blood pressure high? If on medication, are you taking blood pressure lowering medications? A. Yes, I have high blood pressure, and/or I am taking blood pressure lowering medications. B. My blood pressure is borderline high, and/or I am considering taking blood pressure lowering medications. C. It could be if I didn't exercise and eat well. D. My blood pressure is normal, and I don't take blood pressure lowering medications. 80. Do you have high cholesterol? If on medication, are you taking cholesterol lowering medication? A. Yes, I have high cholesterol, and/or I am taking cholesterol lowering medications. B. My cholesterol is borderline high, and/or I am taking cholesterol lowering medications. C. I need to check my cholesterol, but overall it is within normal limits. D. My cholesterol is normal, and I don't take cholesterol-lowering medications. Score your test. Congratulations on completing the test. All you need to do now is tally your score. It's very simple. Just follow the four easy steps. 1. Add up the number of times you circled choices A, B, C, and D, and write each subtotal down. 2. Score your answers using this scoring system. Assign 0 points for each A answer, so the total for all answers in column A will always be 0. Assign 1 point for each B answer. If you answered B 10 times, the total is 10 times 1, which equals 10. Assign 2 points for each C answer. If you answered C 10 times, the total is 10 times 2, which equals 20. Assign 3 points for each D answer. If you answered D 10 times, the total is 10 times 3, which equals 30. Add the totals for each. You will obtain a total score. For example, my friend Lauren took the test and here are her results. She had 5 A answers, which equals 0 points. 10 B answers, 10 times 1 equals 10 points. 25 C answers, 25 times 2 equals 50 points. And 40 D answers, 40 times 3 equals 120 points. Her total score is 180. 3. Next, refer to your total score and select your classification using the following criteria. If your total score is lower than 80, you are at the beginner level. If your total score is between 80 and 160, you are at the intermediate level. If your total score is higher than 160, you are at the advanced level. This is your primary type within your unique constitution, which reflects the dominant characteristic of your overall brain makeup. For example, Lauren turned out to be at the advanced level. However, depending on how close you score to the cutoffs, scores around 80 and or around 160, your profile might fall somewhere in between two levels. For instance, Lauren scored 180, which brings her closer to the next level down, the intermediate level. As such, Lauren is at the advanced level with some traits of an intermediate level. Other people might fall somewhere in between intermediate and beginner levels. If that's you, too, make sure you read the recommendations for both levels. Next steps. Once you have identified which level you're at, beginner, intermediate, or advanced, move on to the next chapter to find out the meaning behind these levels, along with customized recommendations that make specific sense to your level in particular. This will give you a baseline to put the information in this book to use right away. You can start by using the very next chapter for some immediate tips on how to change or perfect your diet. Try following your plan for at least 3 to 4 weeks and see how you feel. As you follow your recommendations, you will further refine the broader guidelines outlined in Step 2, Eating for Cognitive Power, to unlock the maximum benefit for your individual needs. In fact, via this final step of discovering and embracing your own customized care, you will have integrated all the necessary information to craft an optimal brain fitness plan that is good for you. At first, it might be difficult to eat and drink and be as active as the plan recommends. The first 2 weeks are usually the most challenging. So if you can make it through them, bravo. If you can't, don't worry. Old habits die hard, and everybody slips once in a while. The important thing is to come back to your plan and keep on going. Little by little, you'll be able to master your plan completely. Once you feel that following the plan is going smoothly, try taking the test again. Most likely, you'll find that your habits have improved and your level has shifted. If that happens, it's time to try the plan for your new level. Every level represents a step forward toward the optimal brain diet. We'll use this staging system to ensure that, over time, eating right for your brain becomes an integral part of your lifestyle, while making the transition as easy as possible. Keep in mind that this approach does not offer a magic pill or a quick fix, and just as quickly lost, solution. The knowledge you discover practicing neuronutrition is the beginning of a lifelong journey. The goal here is to help you develop the healthiest brain you can possibly have, and to provide you with a map to keep it healthy for years to come. This goal is far more ambitious than shedding a few pounds for a one-time occasion and being done with it. So from your end, you need to be willing to challenge yourself, to go beyond your day-to-day routines, and to stay true to your own unique path to health. The ultimate goal is to help you get from any of the other levels into advanced, and then to score at the top of the test, until you become your own personal brand of the ultimate centenarian. As with the actual centenarians living among us, Your mission is to improve your lifestyle to maximize the longest, healthiest, most memory-rich life possible. So, which level are you? 15. The three levels of neuronutrition care. Beginner level. By and large, a brain-healthy diet is simply not the beginner's cup of tea. Among all the levels we'll cover, beginners typically consume the largest amount of unhealthy foods, laced with hidden sources of pro-inflammatory nutrients, trans fats, refined sugars, and harmful chemicals. At the same time, they rarely eat brain-essential, nutritionally dense foods like fresh vegetables, fruits, legumes, and/or whole grains, let alone fish or shellfish. The recommendations for your level are meant to challenge you to leave your comfort zone and modify your eating habits to go easier on your brain. The plan, outlined in this chapter, addresses the aforementioned concerns and offers some practical solutions to achieve your goals for a long and healthy life. While nobody becomes nutritionally educated or physically fit with a snap of their fingers, what you can do is adopt as many of the recommendations as possible and channel them, little by little, into your daily routine. For instance, eating some vegetables is better than eating no vegetables. Drinking a glass of plain water is better than drinking a bottle of soda. Eating a cup of berries is better than eating a banana. But if you crave a banana, that's still better than a donut. Our first goal is to reverse any shortage of vitamins, minerals, and fiber by increasing both your intake and diversity of fresh vegetables, fruits, legumes, and whole grains. In addition to the general guidelines outlined in Step 2, Eating for Cognitive Power, your plan includes specific recommendations as to which food items you should favor as a regular feature of day-to-day life. Fruits, veggies, nuts, and seeds. First and foremost, make an effort to eat vegetables and fruit every single day. Keep in mind that one of the major health factors hard at work in the centenarian's diet is their consumption of unprocessed rather than processed foods. Since centenarian islanders eat produce from their gardens and fields, they consume fewer pesticides and more nutrients, especially natural antioxidants. In keeping with this principle, make an effort to replace bland and nutritionally empty iceberg lettuce with a mix of fresh country greens and crisp organic broccoli or cauliflower. And did you know that there are more than 3,000 varieties of heirloom tomatoes in active cultivation worldwide? Next time you're about to buy the usual pale-looking beef tomato, try another variety instead. Red, yellow, green, even purple. The brighter the color, the better it is for you. As you kick off this level, your focus will be on eating at least one serving of leafy green vegetables, collard greens, Swiss chard kale or spinach, and/or cruciferous vegetables, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, or cabbage, every day. This is key, so really make a point of it. Other veggies to keep on your radar are sweet peas, rich in omega-3s, and orange vegetables like carrots, winter squash, and butternut squash, which are rich in antioxidants and natural sugars. Last, it is important to include onions, garlic, and fresh herbs like sage and rosemary as a daily addition to whatever you're eating. Remember that frozen, canned, and otherwise processed produce doesn't contain nearly the same amounts of brain-essential nutrients as does fresh organic produce. If you don't have access to fresh produce, frozen organic options are still better than the commercially grown GMO varieties on most supermarket shelves. Your assignment is to make sure that you eat at least one cup of veggies with both your lunch and dinner. Now let's talk fruit. Fresh berries, such as blueberries, raspberries, blackberries, and strawberries, as well